long time ago, in the galaxy far, far away. It is a dark time for Star Wars toy collectors. The elusive rare collectibles are impossible to find, and online providers toss action figures loosely into boxes, resulting in damaged collectibles. You will never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy. Enter Jet's Toy Hut, with the best hand-packed shipping online, 7 sizes of custom Toy Hut boxes, in packing peanuts, bubble wrap, and air pillows. For a zero-movement policy, Toy Hut is the best option on this side of the Dagobah system.
ToyHut.com. All too easy.
We talk about flinging poop, and it's not always a monkey. I'm Kevin Leeson.
Pray to God you're a bad singer.
I'm Torrin Atkinson.
Oi, Governor! Get a load of me dangling warts!
I'm Sean Cullen.
I'm Joe Fulgham, and this is
Caustic Soda!
It's the Caustic Soda Podcast! Yay!
It's time to set the mics up. It's time for Tales of Woe. It's time to take the red pill on the Caustic Soda Show.
It's time to do our research, unless your name is Joe. It's time to load the wiki on the Caustic Soda Show.
To introduce our guest star, that's what I'm here to do. So it makes me very hungry to introduce to you Sean Cullen!
But now let's get things started. Why don't you get things started? It's time to get things started on the informational, aberrational, strangulational, nauseational. Strap in for the Caustic Soda Show. So, good day, eh? Our topic today is music. And our very special guest, Skyping in from Toronto, is writer, actor, finalist in NBC's The Last Comic Standing, 3-time Gemini Award winner.
Wow.
Okay.
And musician.
Is that a quintuple threat?
Sean Cullen.
There are a lot of threats going on.
A lot of threats. Very fitting for this podcast. Many, many threats.
Welcome, Sean Cullen.
Threat level 4. Threat level orange.
It's appropriate with all those bona fides that we would have you on board for our music episode.
Well, I'll do my best.
If you were to spontaneously break into song, none of us would hold it against you.
Well, okay, that sounds good.
No pressure. You were in a band called Corky and the Juice Pigs for how many years?
Well, I guess it was almost 10 years.
And what was that like?
Oh, tremendous. Well, it was fun. I mean, there were 3 of us, and we got together in university, and we started doing this thing just as a kind of a joke. We got into an amateur contest, and we won that and started working, and then I never finished my degree. I just kept going. There was no point.
I wish I had a successful reason for that for myself.
Not finishing a degree.
I just didn't finish.
Then I just played video games.
That's a good idea.
And you also have a podcast called the Sean Pod.
Yes, I do.
Which is quite entertaining.
Well, I find it entertaining. I mean, all I do is really talk to people. I have a few guests, and then I just make up crap about things. So that's fun. Mm-hmm. You know, I try and do little radio dramas with only one person and have lots of sound effects. It's going okay. I think people are liking it all right.
Yeah, I'm certainly enjoying it.
Mm, good.
And you're also a novelist.
I've written 5 novels to this point. I'm working on my 6th novel. The first 3 were based on a character called Hamish X, who's a super orphan who he battles the orphan disposal agency, and it's evil, sinister gray agents. And then the next one was about a character named Brendan, who is 14, and he's going to high school, and he finds out he's not human. He's a fairy.
magical being, and he has all these relatives he never knew about, and there are fairies all over that we just can't see, but they pretend to be us, pretend to be human, and right. just work at Starbucks and stuff.
Yeah, good times.
Wow, I want to read all these now. I absolutely do.
Well, you know, YA is really the most explosive growth in publishing. You know, it's kids read a lot, and it's harder to get boys to read. I mean, boys have so much competition for their attention, stuff like video games and movies, and girls are always going to read. They read tons of stuff, you know, so it's just getting boys engaged, and I try and make my stuff full of farts and
yeah.
Nice, good times.
Now, falling down.
Now, YA, you mean, of course, yellow arsenic.
Yes, yellow arsenic. Kids love it. It's what's hot on the street right now.
A little pouch of it comes with every Sean Cullen book, huh?
Yeah, that's right. And you can hallucinate and make up your own story. It's like a make-your-own-adventure on LSD.
Yeah, nice.
And you're also one of the scriptwriters and vocal talent on the upcoming cartoon Rocket Monkeys.
Yes, that's right. I play Gus. I play Nefarious. I play Gus. I play Deep Space Dave.
Oh, nice.
And, yeah, it's been really fun. I work with a guy named Mark Stewart. He's really great. He's a young guy just out of Humber Comedy College, if there is such a thing. Mm-hmm. And he's just really talented. He plays Wally, and he's just fantastic.
And this is, you know, Rocket Monkeys. It's two rocket monkeys in space, and there's hijinks, and it's kind of Ren and Stimpy-ish and SpongeBob SquarePants-ish. And
it's a good time.
Well, it's very stupid. It's very stupid.
Yeah.
They're very stupid monkeys,
yeah.
And they're astronauts. They're in charge of a ship, and it's very stupid.
Well, yeah. We all know that stupidity and space travel just go hand in hand.
Well, sure. And my character, Gus, is kind of like a – he's kind of like a Charlton Heston of monkeys. All right, everyone. It's time to monkey up. And my brother Wally is a bit sweeter and cuter. And,
right.
Yes, and Nefarious is very, very like a almost snaggle pussy. I will destroy you all.
Yeah, so it's quite fun to do that.
Yes, and I'm actually the prop designer on said cartoon, so I get to design the rocket ships and the ray guns, and it's quite quite exciting and vivacious.
Oh, look at that.
I bet it is. Yeah. I bet it is.
Well, let's get into our topic, which is music.
Mm.
Now, the word origin for music, of course, comes from muse.
Which is a Greek goddess.
Daughters of Zeus?
Yes, artistic inspiration.
Pretty much all the goddesses are daughters of Zeus. He humped everything.
Well, he's got some brothers and sisters.
Yeah,
everybody's related.
Yeah.
Hera, his wife, is also his sister.
Oh, yeah. Just as, you know, it was meant to be, right?
Greek style.
Absolutely.
As nature intended it.
He's one of the few gods, men, who have given birth to a goddess, though. He, Athena came out of his head.
Yeah, split his skull with an axe, I think.
Oh.
That's right, and out came Athena.
Brutal.
The wisdom of Zeus. Sweet. Mm-hmm.
Do you guys know what the phobia of music is?
Musophobia?
Oh, you'd think that.
Uh-huh.
But if you remember our rats episode, musophobia is actually the fear of mice.
Oh, okay. So what's music?
Melophobia.
Well, that makes sense.
Melody.
Exactly. Right. From okay. the...
Chinese for melody.
Yeah, exactly. From the Greek melos, meaning song. So
let's get melos.
Let's
I wonder
get
what
mellows.
What would melophobia look like? Like if music came on, we'd just run screaming from the room, or would you cower and shake and quiver, or would you?
You just try to kill it, I think.
I think you'd become extremely anxious, probably sweat.
Yeah, your eyes dart.
Stick your fingers in your ears and go la la la, but you got to make sure you're off key because you don't want to create music when trying to block out the music.
The it's irony.
Horrible. That'd be an interesting psychological study.
Oh, God, I'm on key. Ah!
Now, melophobes notwithstanding, everyone loves music. Agreed?
Some people do not, but they're dumb.
But today we'll be talking about music's dark side.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the evil face of music.
Yes. It's like the preacher father from Footloose.
Yep.
Actually, he didn't mind music. He hated the dancing.
Oh, that's right.
He hated the dancing because his wife died as a result of a tap dance accident.
She tapped herself to death. Oh no! A band of stampeding tappers crushed her to death with their metal tipped shoes.
Kevin, save it for the tap dancing episode.
She was raped to death by Gregory Hines.
God, in an alley after seeing a musical review right in front of her son, who turned out to become Music Man.
Tap Man.
Tap Man.
Musicians are a superstitious, cowardly lot.
So I'd like to talk about music-inspired riots.
Okay.
First of all, the Rite of Spring, you guys have all heard of this, the ballet.
Oh, yes.
With music by Igor Stravinsky.
It caused a riot.
Yeah, it did.
It was so bizarre when it came out to people's ears that Stravinsky, people wanted him killed. The people in the audience could not stand it. They went insane, tore the theater apart.
Yeah, pretty much.
What year was this?
This was 1913 in Paris, Paris.
Uh-huh.
The problem they had mostly was with the bassoon. Oh, the bassoon. It played higher in its range than anyone else had ever heard.
Madness. How dare he?
If only I had a nickel every time I'd heard the phrase, oh, the bassoon.
Stop that bassoon. It's driving me mad.
The accursed bassoon. Oh, my God. I feel a YA novel coming on here.
Oh.
The cursed bassoon.
Terrifying. No natural bassoon could play notes that high.
What a bassoon.
Possessed by the devil. The intensely rhythmic score and primitive scenario and choreography shocked the audience that was accustomed to the elegant conventions of the classical ballet.
Uh-huh.
I think it was Nijinsky, wasn't it? Did Nijinsky choreograph it?
I don't have that information, actually.
But it's not a surprise that anybody on our podcast would know more than we would about anything.
Precisely.
So we're going to have to just default that you are correct, sir.
The complex music and violent dance steps depicting fertility rites first drew catcalls, whistles, and loud booing. There were large arguments in the audience between supporters and opponents of the work. These were soon followed by fist fights in the aisles.
What?
Yep.
Wait, so the audience was fighting over what? Over whether this was actual art or not?
Music, yes.
Yeah.
It was true.
So somebody was defending it.
Yeah, so lots of people were. I mean, the Russians were probably the most forward-thinking in music at the time. And this, it really was shocking. It's kind of arrhythmic, atonal, a lot of it. And it was really very different from what was popular at the day, like Franz Liszt or Brahms, and very kind of straightforward classical music.
Well, it was like the math rock of its time, I guess.
Sure was.
Noise metal. The unrest in the audience eventually degenerated into a riot. The police arrived by intermission, but they restored only limited order. Chaos reigned for the remainder of the performance. So I guess they just kept on going.
Yeah, the show must
go on,
right?
Yeah. Fights in the aisles, but I guess it all added to the...
ambiance?
I mean, that's what you want in a ballet.
Well, you know what they say about art. You know, you get a strong emotional reaction out of people. That's art, right?
Yes.
Good or bad.
Yeah, exactly. Good or bad. If you take a dump and dance around it, you're going to bring people pretty much either on one side of it or the
That's
other.
That's right.
Yeah.
There's no sitting on the fence in that one.
Literally.
No.
You know, if only we'd been there, we could have, like, made a lot of money selling shirts afterwards. I survived the Rite of Spring,
exactly.
All I got was this lousy T-shirt.
Oh, man, merchandising. If only they had been sophisticated merchandise-wise.
Stravinsky ran backstage where the producer was turning the lights on and off in an attempt to try to calm the audience.
Oh, you should have gone out with, like, a spritzer and, like, started spritzing the people fighting in the aisles.
The audience is on edge. Quick, turn the lights on and off.
That always worked in grade 7.
Why? I mean, why would you turn the lights on and off to soothe people?
I know.
That would make people go, what? The place is burning. What's happened now?
It's not working. Faster.
They wanted to turn it into a light switch rave. That's what he wanted to do.
All the epileptics just started falling and twitching in the aisles.
And they didn't even know what epilepsy was back then.
They're possessed by the devil. Did you know who was there at the opening?
No, tell me.
Coco Chanel.
Oh, yeah, because there was there was a 2009 film, Coco Chanel and Igor Stravinsky, and they
made
this,
out.
Maybe indeed they did. I didn't see it. Did you see it?
No. I have seen it, yes. I don't remember that part. I kind of was falling asleep.
But they dramatized this riot at the beginning of the film.
Oh, well, there you go.
And then there was, in 1979, the Disco Demolition Night.
Was this the night that they blew up all those disco records at a baseball game
exactly
or something?
Exactly correct.
Okay, this was in like Chicago or something like that, right?
Yeah, it's the brainchild of a Chicago disc jockey and the Chicago White Sox owner's son. The idea was to have a death to disco movement between games of a Detroit Tigers White Sox doubleheader in 1979.
Oh, yeah. You know what? It's always a good idea to go to a sporting event where you've got drunk sports fans and start using high explosives. Yeah. What could possibly go wrong?
Well, here's the thing. I don't understand what the problem was with disco. I mean, really, like you would have to be like, what killed me? It's like guys with, you know, these dudes in like Pickering or wherever, you know. I grew up in Peterborough, which is a total
disco town.
No, well, it's just like, duh, ABBA sucks, man. And then they'd be like, Queen, that's cool. And, you know, like, oh, Queen, the giant gay man with a handlebar mustache and the cruising jacket. That's the guy you think is hot? I don't really. People are stupid, basically, yeah. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah, Freddie Mercury kind of had a disco vibe, didn't he? I mean,
well, he was utterly gay. He was, every song was about being the queen of something or like being stuck in a thing and dancing hard and, you know.
What about You're My Best Friend? That wasn't gay.
No, You're My Best Friend because we can't get married. This is.
It should have been called "You're my, you know, you're my your eligible bachelor roommate.
You're my civil partner."
Yeah.
So here we go. The Rites of Spring. The choreographer was Vaclav Nijinsky.
There you go. Well, you would defend disco as a guy who has a song called "I Am Addicted to Disco" on his album "I Am a Human
yeah.
Man."
Yes, it's my German salute to German disco.
Nice.
I am addicted to the disco. Do, I am do, addicted to do, the beat. Do, it never do, ends.
Do. Yeah, that's a good one.
I'm pointing it at you and your friends. That's what I'm
saying. So people were told to bring unwanted disco records to the game in exchange for an admission fee of 98 cents. The records would be collected, placed in a large crate in center field, and blown up. White Sox management was hoping for a crowd of 12,000, about double the average for a Thursday night game. An estimated 90,000 turned up.
Oh, man, people hated disco.
At the 52,000-seat stadium. So thousands of people climbed walls and fences attempting to enter the stadium.
And probably like 30 or 40,000 left outside saying, I'm sorry, we're out of tickets. You yeah, can't get your 98 be. Cents for your disco album.
Off ramps.
I'm sorry, you cannot come. You cannot hate disco anymore.
Please disperse. Leave.
No, it's more like this. It's like, okay, everybody, we have no more room inside the stadium. Everyone else congregated at the discotheque across the street right. Where we will start playing the albums you have brought. And they went into a frothing rage.
What's sad is 90,000 people didn't really like baseball.
That's the real tragedy there.
They were coming to hate disco together.
They were looking for a venue where they could all despise disco. Mm. And they found it. Off ramps to the stadium from the expressway were closed when the stadium was filled. When the staff stopped collecting records at the door, some began to throw their records from the stands during the game, often striking other fans.
Or players.
The crate containing the collected records was placed in the field and rigged with explosives.
Wow. How could this happen? It's like a WKRP episode. Yeah,
that's exactly what it is. I've actually seen the footage from this. There is video of the explosion.
Yeah, you can totally watch it on YouTube, and we'll post it on causticsodapodcast.com.
Obviously.
When detonated, the explosives tore a hole in the outfield grass surface, and a small fire began burning. Thousands of fans immediately rushed the field. Some lit more fires and started small-scale riots. Some pulled down the batting cage, wrecked it, and ran it across the field. Bases were stolen, literally, along with chunks of the field itself.
Well, seeing something blew a giant hole in the field for disco demolition night, they kind of hoisted themselves on that petard.
Well, listen, do you think today, could you imagine anyone in the world of liability
these
days ever even suggesting that something's going to be torched anywhere?
Or
alone where you have $70 million worth of baseball players standing around.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, and I guarantee that there was like some shard of vinyl that like stuck somebody in the eye and like partially blinded them. I guarantee you that happened in some way, shape, or form. Just
remember the days when we can blow up records in the middle of a baseball field. I miss those days, man.
Take that, music that gets other people laid.
Eventually, the field was cleared by the Chicago police in riot gear. The field was so badly torn up that the umpires decided the second game could not be played.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so those five people who actually did show up for the game, like, what a ripoff.
What could be the good part of letting people in for 98 cents?
Uh-huh. Well, this is the great part, is people now paid 98 cents to see a riot, not even a baseball game.
I'd rather pay 98 cents to see a riot than a baseball game. If we could blow up baseball games in the middle of a field, I would join for that.
That's a whole different league.
I like riots.
They have an inherent entertainment value, don't they?
Yeah, it's erotic. It's not the feeling. A lot of babies were made that day. in center field.
I mean, I wasted my time during that NHL riot then.
Yeah, I guess you did. Well, Joe, do you want to talk about backmasking?
Backmasking is a recording technique in which a sound or message is recorded backward onto a track that is meant to be played forward. So basically, you record it forward and then you use a method to just reverse it. Mm-hmm. In the late 1970s, fundamentalist Christian groups began to claim that backmasked messages could bypass the conscious mind and reach the subconscious, where they could be unknowingly accepted by the listener.
That's how Christianity really caught on.
As seen in the Bloom County Billy and the Boingers comic, where they reveal the backward masking says, "Go to church, say your prayers, tithe, tithe." In early 1982, the Trinity Broadcasting Network's Paul Crouch hosted a show with self-described neuroscientist William Yarrell, who argued that rock stars were cooperating with the Church of Satan to place hidden subliminal messages on records.
Well, it was hard to get a record deal back then.
Yeah, you know, you had to sell whatever you could.
See, here's the thing.
Your soul.
When you're dealing with an audience that is like going out and buying metal albums with all the devil imagery on the cover anyway, do you really need to backmask it? Like, you're pretty much preaching to the converted.
Well,
the converted,
that's the thing.
The devil, right?
I think it would be more disturbing if it was like ABBA doing backmasking.
Yes, exactly.
And maybe they did and we never found it.
Yeah, because nobody was looking at ABBA because they were flying beneath the radar.
The obvious satanic
music. Crisp bread. Buy crisp bread.
You listen to ABBA.
Herring is delicious.
Yeah, you have a...
Herring is delicious.
Perhaps this explains IKEA's massive popularity worldwide.
Exactly.
ABBA was seeding mines around the world to buy cheap furniture that you could just put together yourself.
Don't lose your weird little key.
No, yeah, it was the Allen key industry that was behind the whole IKEA craze.
Yeah, that was what it was all about, just a way of getting Allen keys to the people.
In 1982, CBS Evening News Dan Rather discussed the finding of possible backmask messages and played reverse sections of songs by Led Zeppelin, Electric Light Orchestra, and Styx.
Oh, Styx.
Yeah,
those dirty devil worshippers, Styx.
Well, it is right in the name. I mean, the river Styx, for God's sakes.
Yes, but that's not necessarily hell. It's the land of the dead.
Neither good nor bad.
It's underworld, though. It's underneath everything. So that is kind of denotes bad.
It's also non-Christian. You don't believe that crazy story.
So are sewers.
A 1983 California bill was introduced to prevent backmasking that, quote, can manipulate our behavior without our knowledge or consent and turn us into disciples of the Antichrist.
I like that that got into the legal system.
Yeah, I like the fact that they didn't actually have to support this with any science whatsoever. Like,
no, yeah.
They had a self-described neuroscientist.
Involved in the discussion of the bill was a California State Assembly Consumer Protection and Toxic Materials Committee hearing, during which Stairway to Heaven was played backwards. I'm going to emphasize this, Torin did in the notes that he made for me. The successful bill made the distribution of records with undeclared backmasking an invasion of privacy for which the distributor could be sued.
The thing is, if you play Stairway to Heaven backwards, then you stop making out with your lips are forced away from other ones. Yeah.
You start pushing your bra back on.
Yes.
You got exactly. Grabbing your own ass.
And as we know, Christians don't like that.
No.
No.
I don't even understand the process by which people actually voted to pass this bill. That there wasn't a "are we insane" moment, that there was no voice of clarity amongst the California legislature.
Scared parents, you know. You tell them something, they believe you because they believe you, but all the other crazy stories you're telling them.
Was there ever any proof that anyone ever did this ever?
Well, there's been this whole thing with Jay-Z putting all kinds of stuff in his produced music.
Is that right?
Weird. Not necessarily devil worship, but worship of spirits and stuff like that. I forget. I think it's in Rihanna.
Just like weird new age crystal therapy stuff.
Yeah, maybe it's true. I think he's probably doing it as a joke now.
Yeah, I mean, everybody who does backmasking since this has been an actual issue, they've all got to be kind of just kidding now, right?
Yeah, because Weird Al Yankovic put backmasking on his Nature Trail to Hell song, and the backmask message was "Satan eats cheese whiz." So I think once Weird Al Yankovic does it,
it's officially
it's no longer relevant.
Ooh, I feel a Corky and the Juice Pigs reunion coming on with a backmask song.
No, we're just going to celebrate their entire catalog by playing it backwards.
Oh, there you go.
That's a way to go.
exactly as funny.
I'll put up a link to Wikipedia's list of backmass messages. People can peruse through that on their own.
For those who are really,
really, really
bored.
I find it kind of uninteresting because you can't even tell when you hear something backwards. You can't figure out what it is very easily. So the idea that it subconsciously manipulates your
mind. It all sounds
mind.
Like this, right? It's all like, oh, zip, it's all like that, right?
Yeah.
And you just hear what you want to hear. It's just like an oral, it's a Rorschach test, right? Like you just kind of like bestow upon it whatever meaning you want to give it.
Oh, I like that idea.
Oh, yeah?
The oral Rorschach test.
Okay, I just TM'd it.
Damn it. All right, well, let's move into Norwegian black metal.
Oh, yeah.
Identified by some as a cult, the Black Metal Inner Circle was a Norwegian metal subculture in Norway during the early 1990s.
Okay.
Many youths in the circle gathered in the basement of a record shop, Helvete, which means hell. In Norwegian,
yeah.
In Oslo. The scene was a focus of controversy due to the strong anti-Christian beliefs of its members and the crimes they committed. There were 2 cases of murder, over 2 dozen cases of arson, and other allegedly satanically motivated crimes.
So they were just wandering out into society and performing acts of arson just because?
They really hated Christianity. They felt that that the Christian culture had come in and ruined the Norwegian way of life, the worship of Odin and Thor and more natural religions and things like that. They were angry young men in a country that's pretty decent and they had nothing else to complain about.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
But these guys go and they target specifically ancient churches,
you know,
like 1,000-year-old churches, and destroy them, burn them to the ground. And it's kind of tragic, but
yeah.
I love Thor. I mean, I think we all do.
Well, who doesn't?
And you're talking about the Canadian bodybuilder / metal star, right? We all worship at his altar.
Name's Thor.
Yeah.
Yeah. In April 1991, Mayhem vocalist Per Yngve Dead Olin, dead as in quotes.
Okay.
That was his kind of...
His moniker, yeah. His death metal.
Committed suicide. He was found with slit wrists and a shotgun wound to the head.
Well, that's pretty definitive. That's making a statement.
Discovered by his guitarist, Euronymous. Was his real name?
That was in air quotes as well?
Oh, yeah, his name was, I'm going to pronounce this horribly, Øystein Arseth.
Okay.
I don't know how to pronounce that O with the slash through it.
That sounds more made up than Euronymous.
I'm going to say Øystein.
Øystein, probably, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Dead's suicide note apologized for firing the weapon indoors and ended, excuse all the blood.
Wow, that's actually surprisingly considerate of a death metal.
Yeah.
He was a very odd person. I did a bit of research on this as well. And the reason he was called Dead, he was one of the first ones to start using what they call corpse paint, which is,
right.
So he'd paint his face white. And a lot of people thought, oh, it's like Kiss. But he did it to try to look dead. He wanted to look like a corpse on stage and performed a lot like that, like just really drove home the I'm dead, I'm a corpse thing. And he was very odd off stage as well.
We are all corpses. We are all walking corpses. I am a dead man.
I mean, they probably just don't. You go far enough north, you get so little sunlight that you just sort of start to look like that naturally, probably.
You start feeling sad. Seasonal affective disorder.
That's right.
Disorders.
If only they'd taken vitamin D supplementation, all this horrible sadness would go away.
Norwegian black metal might never have happened.
Euronymous bought a disposable camera with which he photographed the body. One of these photographs was later used as a cover of a bootleg live album. Apparently, he made necklaces with bits of the skull and claimed to have given these necklaces to musicians he deemed worthy.
Oh, so it was actually an honorific to get a piece of another man's skull.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lionel Richie has one.
I had no idea he was so into Norwegian black metal.
Hello.
Oh, yeah.
Is it a piece of my skull you're looking for?
I think it's just the darkness of his soul. Euronymous was murdered by a colleague as well. His body was found with 23 cut wounds, 2 to the head, 5 to the neck, and 16 to the back.
Ooh, that doesn't feel like a defensive wound.
No.
No, I think he was sleeping on his stomach. Got stabbed 17 times.
Yeah.
And then woke up. It's like, what? What's going on? Stab, stab. Stab, 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 stab.
It was just a night terror.
Actually, it was an accident. He sleeps with a knife at all times, and he just rolled over 17 times and accidentally impaled himself.
And we talked about the arsons. There was over 50 arsons of Christian churches between 1992 and 1996, and some musicians, including Euronymous, had plotted to blow up a cathedral which appears on an album cover. Euronymous's murder put an end to this plan and stalled the album's release.
That's too bad, eh?
The world is missing it, obviously. Yeah. It was a terrible tragedy in the land of music.
And Joe, you watched a movie about Norwegian black death metal, documentary?
I watched a documentary called Until the Light Takes Us, which is about these guys. So I heard actually from, it was Varg Vikernes that killed Euronymous.
Okay.
And he's in prison now, or was in prison just as they were filming this. He got 21 years. The documentary was not very good. The documentary seemed to be made by people who really liked these guys. Wow. So there was no kind of questioning of what they were saying.
Right, so less journalistic.
They just kind of accepted everything. And it still had a documentary feel rather than being a promo film.
Yeah.
But that felt a little phony to me when I was watching it. That it was just like, really, you're just going to let them talk and not provide any counterpoint at all. But when Varg killed Euronymous, he did it because he thought Euronymous was going to kill him. That they had had this whole escalating drama about the direction of everything. And
were they in the same band?
I think he recorded. He was the bassist, wasn't he?
I can't remember. They didn't go over much of the details of this stuff. They just let these guys talk about all their crazy artistic stances and why they were doing what they're doing, and none of it makes very much sense.
So it's more of a platform and less of a story.
Yeah, they just got really angry about stuff. He goes on huge rants. He's actually quite reasonable when he speaks, but the content of his message is very out there.
It's like Hitler. Hitler was a very well-spoken man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You had crazy ideas.
I had very big flashbacks to that kind of seductive rhetoric when listening to these guys talk. I could see how, young males in that kind of environment could fall prey to this kind of thing.
Young, angry males, perhaps.
But he describes this meeting with Euronymous, and he's like, and I was sure that he was there to kill me because he had basically talked about killing him with his friends. He's like, I'm going to kill him and eat his flesh and do stuff like that.
Right.
So finally, they're in this place, they're in a house or something like that, where he thinks he's about to jump.
And the table is set for dinner.
Yes, exactly.
It's got a piece of paper on it, said, insert, Vikernes here.
And he almost nonchalantly says, he turned around and I knew he was going to kill me, so I stabbed him in the skull and he died instantly. And then he just kept stabbing him, as you heard, 23 cut wounds.
Yeah.
But the first wound was like his knife just went straight into the guy's skull, and Euronymous was dead. And then he kept stabbing. And there was another guy
that
there.
That seems excessive.
It's for metal.
Who got freaked out and ran out to the car. Varg managed to go to the car and calm him down. And then they just calmly drove away and told people what happened.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
It's really, really weird. It's kind of worth watching, but I don't think it's a good documentary.
It doesn't really give an even-handed view of the whole situation.
No, I just kept disliking these guys more and more, and disliking the people who made the documentary.
Funny, because the people who did Jersey Boys are making a musical about it. It's going to be great.
Yeah, what do they call it? Oslo Boys?
Oslo Boys.
There you go.
Stabbed in the skull, stabbed in the face, stabbed in the back, my son.
I can see the billboard right now with their death paint faces and all jazzed up and key lit.
Oh, what a night. Stabbed a guy and then I ate his face. It's going to be good.
There, you've got a goth clientele that is waiting for this project to happen.
That's right, so they can kill me.
Yeah, probably.
As if they need an excuse.
Yeah.
This is true.
All right, music torture.
Music as torture?
Music as torture.
Okay. All right.
Well, what immediately comes to mind is Noriega and the CIA. Do you remember that situation?
Yeah,
I do.
In Panama, where they just put giant speakers up and played Barry Manilow or something really loud.
Yeah.
Day and night.
In 2003, the U.S. military commander in Iraq approved the use of music as part of a package of measures for the use on captured prisoners to create fear, disorient, and prolong capture shock.
So instead of actually shocking, or in addition to actual shocks to the balls.
The use of music was an essential part of the reverse engineering of techniques which are taught in U.S. military schools to train personnel to resist interrogation. Do you follow?
Oh. All right.
Okay.
Okay.
So basically, if you're trained in resisting interrogation, this music is supposed to break down that training.
Shit.
Supposed to reduce your mind to a puddle.
Okay, that sounds like magic to me.
Some former detainee quotes on the topic. My captors cuffed me and put earphones on my head. They played hip-hop and rock music very loud. I remember they played Meatloaf and Aerosmith over and over. I hated that.
What?
I could not take the headphones off as I was cuffed. I had to sleep with the music on and even pray with it. Another person said it was pitch black and no lights on in the rooms for most of the time. They hung me up for 2 days. My legs had swollen. My wrists and hands had gone numb. There was loud music, Slim Shady and Dr. Dre for 20 days.
Ooh, 20 days. Okay, I can see.
I heard this nonstop over and over. I memorized the music, all of it.
Think about when you get that earworm. You just can't get a song out of your head. Yeah. Now when somebody's beaming it in there and it just never stops. Yeah, that would be torture.
I wonder if they interview them beforehand to get their musical preferences so they can go to the other side of the spectrum, right?
That would be something.
Yeah.
Take their iPad pod and look at their playlist, and then there's some kind of program that's like the exact counter.
Some John Cougar Mellencamp, Little Pink Houses, and over and over again.
Sean Cullen's old buddies from Peterborough, you know, if you piped in the Queen, they would just get down with it.
They would love it.
Ironically, Americans use this technique on Americans. Donald Vance was a military contractor who became a whistleblower, passing information to the FBI about suspicious activities at the Iraqi security firm where he worked. When American soldiers raided the company at his urging, Mr. Vance and another American who worked there were detained as suspects by the military, which was unaware that Mr. Vance was an informer.
Right.
Nice.
Vance said, at most hours, heavy metal or country music blared in the corridor. There was a lot of Nine Inch Nails, including March of the Pigs. I couldn't tell you how many times I heard Queen's We Will Rock You.
Oh, yeah. Queen was used.
The experience sort of removes you from you. You can no longer formulate your own thoughts when you're in an environment like that. I started to feel suicidal.
I guess Will Rock You, too, is kind of like foreshadowing. They're like, oh, yeah, we're going to come and rock you. And so you just like, you've this impending doom.
In the ball sack.
Yeah.
I don't really understand what you're talking about. I don't get it.
Other music included AC/DC, Pantera, Metallica's Enter Sandman, the theme to Barney the Dinosaur.
Oh, yeah, that's torture.
That would get me.
Yeah.
I would give up right then.
You love me. We're a happy family.
Wow.
They did a takeoff of that in The Men Who Stare at Goats.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Also, Sesame Street and the Meow Mix TV commercial.
Oh, man.
Can you imagine that for 20 days?
Oh, my God. That would work. Maybe it's some of it, too, is the dichotomous nature of it all. Like, they'll throw some Pantera at you and then the Meow Mix. And then it just, like, completely puts you off kilter. Like, just when you're getting used to the Norwegian black metal, they'll put on Barney the Dinosaur tune and it will... Like, your mind will bend.
You would probably need to do that, because otherwise you just, like, get used to it, like people who get used to their smoke alarms beeping constantly.
Yeah.
Beep.
You live inside a baby's diaper, and after 6 days of being shat on, you just don't notice.
just because...
I don't know why I went there. It has nothing to do with music.
And then comes the talc, and that totally throws you. Oh, the talc!
I think it was Pantera that led you down that path.
Perhaps.
To poopy diaper.
Now, Trent Reznor found out two of his songs were being implemented as part of their music torture.
And he asked for royalties.
That's right.
I wonder if that's even possible. SoCan in Canada.
SoCan. Yeah. They're calling them up going, how many times did you use Bryan Adams' Cuts Like a Knife?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay, you owe him $15.
20 days in a row? Really?
Yeah.
We're going to need payment for every single repeat.
Okay, I've got the Noriega music list.
Oh, let's hear it.
All right.
That they used to torture him with. Oh, there's a picture of John Cusack holding up a boombox.
That's some artistic license. John Cusack wasn't actually there holding up the boombox that was torturing Noriega, was he?
They probably had a paper cutout.
Well, the girl that he loved was inside with Noriega.
Here we go. Here's number one. You've Got Another Thing Coming by Judas Priest.
I love Judas Priest.
50 Ways to Leave Your Lover by Paul Simon.
I couldn't take that, I don't think.
All Over But the Crying, Georgia Satellites.
Oh.
Big Shot by Billy Joel. That would get me going.
Oh, yeah.
By going, do you mean dancing?
Yeah. Blue Collar Man by Styx, Born to Run, Bruce Springsteen.
Oh yeah.
Bring Down the Hammer by the Georgia Satellites. What's with the Georgia Satellites?
Wow, somebody there was a fan, yeah. or somebody there thought they were total hacks and like, we got to put the Georgia Satellites on this list twice because this is enough to drive anybody so crazy.
Cleaning Up the Town, The Bus Boys. I don't know what the, I've never heard of
that song.
No. Cleaning Up the Town was from the Ghostbusters soundtrack.
Oh, Cleaning Up the Town. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Danger Zone by Kenny Loggins.
Oh, Danger Zone. That's awesome.
Danger Zone.
Oh, yeah. That you know that there's some Marine out there going, oh, yeah, Danger Zone. Bring it. That.
Dancing in the Streets by David Bowie and Mick Jagger. Yeah. Oh my God. That is the most
that would do it
video.
For me. I would come screaming out of my compound after 1 second of that song.
Oh, this one's a bit ironic. Panama, Van Halen.
Oh, yeah. That is ironic. Or is it appropriate?
No, they actually got David Lee Roth down there to do it live. And it was the sight of his zebra striped pants.
He was shaking his chest hair at him.
Yeah. And his high kicks that really brought Noriega to his knees.
There's some strange ones. Taking It to the Streets by the Doobie Brothers.
Taking It to the Streets.
Taking It to the Streets.
These are all like get out of your bunker and come out and party kind of songs.
It's almost like the power of suggestion thing. Like all.
Here's one that would kill me. We Didn't Start the Fire.
Oh,
Billy
my God.
Joel.
That is a terrible
Another
song.
Another Billy Joel track.
You Send Me by Sam Cooke.
How does that one go?
Darling, you.
Oh, yes.
Send me. Then Youth Gone Wild by someone close to my heart from Skid Row. Sebastian Bach, who is from Peterborough.
Oh, he's from Peterborough, really?
Went to my high school, yes.
So you're like 2 degrees of separation from torturing Noriega.
I'm ready. I want it.
Well, let's move on to castrati.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
In Europe, when women were not permitted to sing in the Roman Catholic Church, choir boys might be castrated to prevent their voices breaking at puberty.
Oh, I thought this was going to be about rats with little casts on their legs.
Cast rat eye?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. That's sad.
That would be sad.
Sad.
Some of us are not professionals, Mr. Cullen. Some of us are amateurs.
Castration, usually at around 8 or 9 years old, prevents a boy's larynx from being transformed by the normal physiological events of puberty. As a result...
What's normal about puberty?
Yeah, there's that.
Nothing.
As a result, the vocal range of prepubescence is largely retained, and the voice develops into adulthood in a unique way. As the castrato's body grew, his lack of testosterone meant that his bone joints did not harden in the normal manner. Thus, the limbs of the castrati often grew unusually long, as did the bones of their ribs.
Oh, no, that's not the only thing that wouldn't harden normally.
Well, there's that.
No! Whoa! Sorry, I was just, red buttons wasn't going to show up, so.
One method of castration, drug the boy and put him in very hot water.
Then cut his balls off.
Actually, they would be physically crushed.
Oh!
And then the spermatic cord was cut using tools of the period. This is the 15th century.
Oh, God.
Jesus.
Castrati were usually abnormally tall, obese, and without body hair.
Sounds like my mom.
Oh, hey.
It's Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day, Mom.
Castration, of course, doesn't make you a good singer.
No.
No.
That would be shitty, wouldn't it? And now I'm castrated, but I'm not great at singing. So I'm not even in the choir, you're telling me now, right?
Shouldn't there be an audition
process?
You
cut off my balls, you crush them.
Yeah.
You crush my balls, you cut the sperm cord. Now you're telling me I'm not making the cut. Is that what you're saying? I'm not going to get in.
This is the worst episode of American Idol ever.
I think I would purposefully sing bad in the hopes that they would not bother.
Yeah, shouldn't there be an audition process to select the proper castrati? Or I guess maybe everybody, if they knew they were doing the castrati auditions, would just blow the audition, right? Just like,
I figure even back then they decided that choir boys were a dime a dozen. They could do whatever they wanted with them.
I guess that's a distinct possibility.
Well, 4,000 boys were castrated every year, but about 40 would become successes in the opera.
4,000 to 40?
That's 1%, friends.
Oh,
yeah. I would not want to be one of the 3,960 that didn't make it.
That's a sad life.
I wouldn't want to be any of the 4,000. It's not worth it. That is not a fair trade.
I guess that's true.
There's nothing wrong with a good adult singer. Sing in your regular grown-up voice. Who cares?
Prepubescent castration for this purpose was made illegal in Italy in 1870. The last castrato died in 1922.
Okay.
And there are recordings that I'll throw in the podcast. You nailed it. Nailed it.
Sean is the best guest we've ever had. He's currently crushing his genitals for us.
I can't find the sperm cord. I'm biddling around here. Here's the thing. I went for a vasectomy about 6 months ago now. And I went in the first day, and they call you the day before, and they say, Mr. Cullen, have you shaved your scrotum? And that's something you don't get a lot of calls like that.
Right. That's true. That's a
also,
special.
Is your refrigerator running?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And then I went in, and they put a little patch on your scrotum to numb it.
Yeah.
And then
was this the surgery-free vasectomy?
Yeah, it's a poke a hole in.
Yeah, that's what I'm going in for too in about a month.
And I was sitting there, and they say, "Are you sure you want to do this? Okay, you're numbed. Yeah, I'm fine." And then I sat for about 2 hours. Then they came in and said, "Sir, here's the thing. The sterilization machine is broken. Something's wrong with it, so we can't do this. So you have to come in about 3 more weeks, and we'll do it again." I said, "Well, how dirty was the guy before me? How dirty was he? I mean, was he really dirty? Because I don't care."
How sterile really doesn't need to be.
You shaved your scrotum for nothing.
Surely it can only be good if I get gangrene in my balls. Just kind of a double whammy on there.
That's right. It's the safety measure.
Mm-hmm. Delish.
Kachivo was a dream I had when I was young. Kachivo is a song that isn't often sung. Kachivo is a Mormon screaming in a hole. Kachivo is a turtle nibbling on a pole. Kachivo means that Christmas isn't really gone. Kachivo shows you how to put your trousers on. Kachivo plays piano while a monkey dies. Kachivo licks the poison from a traitor's eyes. Kachivo, oh my Kachivo, you must believe. Kachivo, Kachivo, Kachivo held the mysteries against his cheek. Kachivo found a rusty tin can in a creek. Kachivo wasted nothing in a bag of love. Kachivo knows the hawk, Kachivo knows the dove. Kachivo squatted deeply and then opened wide. Kachivo smelled the asteroid and never died. Kachivo poured a bag of suet in my face. Kachivo knows the magic of the human race. Kachivo, oh my Kachivo, you must believe. Kachivo, 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 oh my Kachivo. In a game of chance, Kachivo shows the crippled ladies where to dance.
Kachiva lingered softly like a tiger's musk. Kachiva fucked me gently with a walrus tusk. Kachiva, oh my Kachiva, Christopher Reeve, he loved Kachiva to receive. You must Kachiva, it's up your sleeve.
All right, pop culture.
Well, I watched a movie called Hated, the G.G. Allin story. He was a hardcore punk rocker from the mid to late 80s, and he died in 1993. He was known for maiming himself quite regularly.
Maiming?
Yeah, he would crack open beer cans, and then with the jagged edges slash his chest and buttocks.
Oh.
He liked to get naked on stage, which is exceptionally punk for him because he has an incredibly small penis.
Okay.
And he would beat himself with his own microphone, at one point actually smashing his own front teeth out with one of them.
Wow.
So his early photos, he has a full set of teeth. In his later photos, all his top row front teeth are all gone.
Ugh.
Later on in his career, he became quite famous for defecating on stage.
Sure.
Eating it himself,
oh,
then rubbing it on his face, and then whatever remained, flinging at the audience.
I hope he was hungry at most of the concert.
Oh, I shouldn't have filled up on all that bread.
Well, at one end in the other, right? You're creating space for... wow. Now, this is actually a guilty admission of mine. I actually kind of like G.G. Allin's music.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask. With all this shit eating and whatnot, how is the music?
I own like more than one album's worth of G.G. Allin's music.
Is it super punk?
It's pretty super punk. He's got one song called I'm Infected with AIDS.
Okay.
And the chorus is, I'm infected with AIDS. I fuck every day. Every day I kill what I fuck.
Oh, that's pretty punk.
That's pretty punk. That's kind of the tenor of pretty much most of his music.
Does it end in a rhyme, that verse?
Yeah, what's with this guy?
I'm infected with AIDS, I fuck every day, I kill everything that I fuck.
Yeah.
I'm infected with AIDS, and I've got another job where I drive some bread in a truck.
I
fuck the bread, and I go to bed, and I wake up with AIDS again.
I think Sean Cullen has a G.G. Allin cover album about to drop. We'll re-release this recording and...
G.G. Allin special edition. He's going to George Lucas it up and just ruin it. Just make it all nice.
There'll be walkie-talkies in their hands instead of guns.
Yes.
Oh, well, yes.
The director, he actually made this as his NYU student movie.
Oh, okay.
And then it actually got pretty wide release. But he's interviewing him and he says to him, like, how would you describe yourself? And G.G. Allin replied that his music is the gun, his body is the bullets, and his audience is the target. I think that pretty much perfectly encapsulates the G.G. Allin experience.
Does that just mean he's just doing it to get laid?
He's
like, my music gets my body into the audience.
No, like he would actually jump off stage and punch people in the face.
Oh, okay.
Like
that's sex for him.
Literally. And then he'd get laid.
Yeah, it was literal and metaphorical. And he was a pretty hardcore heroin addict.
Are there any softcore heroin addicts? I dabble in heroin.
I think they're
just
actually
on Sundays
are.
only Sundays.
Yeah,
it's like good wigs. You just never see it.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Right.
Speaking of which, I heard from my mother of all people that Stephen Harper wears a wig.
How would she know?
Well, she looked it up.
Okay.
She was puzzled by the fact that his hair was always exactly the same. And she's a nurse, and she's always interested in people's infirmities.
It is
so
very
she went
helmeted.
And looked it up. Yeah. And so she says, yeah, it's a wig. That's what I've read anyway.
Well, that's
scandalous. I don't know if that's
a
good source, but nothing seems to matter. Like, he could go out and shoot a baby in the face.
Exactly.
And he would get elected again.
Yeah.
For all of our non-Canadian listeners, Stephen Harper is the Canadian Prime Minister.
And he's a dick.
And he changed the name of the government of Canada to the Harper government.
It's not even like the Conservative government. There's not even like a name of a party.
I actually see this as a good thing. Because then later on, after we vote this jerk out, we can apologize to the world and go, look, that was not Canada.
That was not the government of Canada.
That was the Harper government. We're back now. Yeah. We're now the good guys again.
But I don't think G.G. Allen took a stand on Harper's hair one way or the other.
No.
He probably shat on it at one point.
But so G.G. Allen, there's actually a companion footage of his last ever performance where a guy was there at this performance with a video camera and he videoed the whole thing and then followed him outside afterwards where a riot took place.
Okay.
Because they shut down the show prematurely. And then he shoots the footage as G.G. Allen gets in a cab and waves goodbye.
Right.
And like 10 hours later, he OD'd and died.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask, where is he now?
Very shortly before, and the whole time he's walking down the street and a riot is happening behind him. And he's trying to get
a cab. He's walking very calmly away like he's in a movie walking away from an explosion.
Yeah, basically. And the whole time he's just talking about how he wants to get high and where they're going to get high and he needs to get high. But it's an annoyance because of the riot, he's upset at the rioters because now he can't catch a cab. None of the cabs are stopping for him.
Oh, I see.
It's very annoying.
Life for G.G. Allen is hard.
Yeah, it's getting hard out there for a punk rocker.
First world heroin addict problems.
Yeah. So he finally catches a cab, waves goodbye to the cinematographer, and then goes off to OD.
So it had a happy ending then.
Yeah, well, for anybody who didn't like his music, I guess so.
Anybody who didn't want to get shit thrown on them at a concert.
That happened to me at a Heart concert.
The interesting part about the guy who's shooting the footage right before G.G. Allen goes off to OD, he actually, after G.G. Allen gets in the cab, he turns to his friends and is like, I got shit on me. And they're all like, oh, cool.
You can sell that on eBay.
Oh, that's cool. And he goes, yeah, but it wasn't even G.G. Allen. It was some other guy was showing shit back at him, and I got hit by that guy. And so he's upset that he hadn't been hit by G.G. Allen's shit. He was just some stranger in the audience.
He has no artistic integrity, this guy's shit.
This guy's shit is just shit. Yeah.
Regular. Well, who remembers the movie Rock and Rule?
Sort of. It was pretty bad.
This was from 1983.
Okay.
It's a Canadian movie.
Oh.
Starring Iggy Pop, Debbie Harry, and Lou Reed.
What?
When the characters sing, it's those characters. They don't do the voices of the talking characters.
Right.
Okay.
So, but anyway, the plot is, in the distant future, humans have died out and animals have mutated into humanoids with snouts and pointed ears.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You remember it now? It's coming back to you?
Nope.
A malevolent rock star named Mock.
Mock and Rock?
I think his name is Mock Swagger, and he does indeed look like Mick Jagger. Kidnaps a singer to force her to participate in the summoning of a demon, and her band must help her stop him.
This sounds like an overly complex plot.
This is from Nelvana.
Oh, but they did a lot of like pretty trippy animation. Like, didn't they do not heavy metal?
I think they actually passed on heavy metal to do Rock and Rule.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a good choice.
Yeah.
Did they do Night Moves, the movie based on the music of Bob Seger?
Well, that would be something.
Their first TV special, I don't know if you remember, this is as a Canadian growing up, was A Cosmic Christmas, where the three wise men aliens came to Earth thousands of years too late. Oops.
This sounds like something that you need to be like on acid to watch.
They did The Devil and Daniel Mouse, if you remember that one.
I remember that one.
Yeah. This was like the follow-up to it. But it is very psychedelic. It's very trippy.
And it was animated?
It's animated, It's all an animated film. Visually interesting.
Okay.
And it does have some racy bits. There's some cartoon boobies.
Oh.
And some panty shots. And it's not a great movie, but you do get to see the demon at the end.
Oh, so there's a payoff.
Yeah.
Kind of like Crossroads with Ralph Macchio. And you get to see... Steve Vai is the devil.
Was he?
Really?
Nice.
And they have to do a guitar off with Steve Vai.
Oh, a rock
you ever
off,
see that
nice.
Movie?
Ralph Macchio has a guitar
Ralph
off?
Ralph Macchio. It kind of plays on that story of Robert Jordan, who went down to the crossroads and got those, I forget that, the exact number of songs. It might be 14, 15 songs, and there's one missing from the collection. Anyway, Ralph Macchio is like a classically trained guitarist. He wants to be a blues man. So he goes down and he basically sells his soul to the devil. Then he has to play off against the devil's guitarist and beats him by playing Mozart.
Okay. Oh, so he is the devil guitarist? It's not even the devil? It's like one of his backup musicians?
his henchmen.
What a disappointment.
That is capitalizing on Karate Kid fame. That is for GD sure. Like, there's no way that Ralph Macchio walks into an audition and they go, perfect!
Yeah, well, you know what? It is actually an okay movie.
And Roger Ebert gave it 3.5 stars out of 4.
Movie night.
So there you are. In your face.
Nice.
A couple of months ago, I saw a short film that starred one Sean Cullen.
Oh.
In which he sang a song.
Jerome Sable approached me to, he's a director, a great guy, and he was doing a short film, The Legend of Beaver Dam. And it's about this character. I play the camp counselor who's playing the guitar with all the kids, and there's a nerdy kid who's a jerk.
Yeah, and the camp counselor seems like he might have a few rage issues, perhaps.
Oh, yeah, he's a dick. And there's one kid, he tries to take him under his wing and say, like, hey, try and be cool, man. Everything's cool. But the kid is such a wimp and a dick that he just finally says, what's wrong with you? You're a fucking idiot. Why don't you shut up? I'm trying to do my story. And he tells a story about a guy who is killed, a camp kid who is killed, and he comes back. And what's his name? I forget the name of the creature.
He's like a zombie character with a chainsaw. And
he comes back to kill the kids. And so he arrives and rams my guitar neck right through my body and kills me. And I die a very bloody death. And it's very fun. Stumpy Sam.
There you go.
Stumpy Sam. Beaver Dam. Stumpy Sam.
It's a real outstanding performance on your part around a campfire.
Mm.
And people can go and check it out at causticsodapodcast.com.
It's a pretty funny movie.
I laughed out loud for pretty much the entire length of the short film when I saw it the first time.
Yeah, it's a good one.
And it opened just before FUBAR 2 on the first night of the TIFF.
Nice.
So it was the first film that was shown that year. So it was quite good. And I was worried because I thought people are going to not really like they're here to see FUBAR too. You know, they're pretty gung-ho about that. But they really embraced it and loved it. So
well,
it
I think
nice.
The audience for FUBAR 2 would be down with this short film. They definitely paired it up with the right audience.
Yeah, losers and weirdos.
That's our audience too.
Yeah, those are our fans. Sweet.
Hi, Soda Jerks. We love you.
Well, did anybody ever see the movie Rock and Roll Nightmare?
No.
It was back from the 80s.
Is it a Canadian film?
It is a Canadian film.
Oh.
Sounds like one.
Of course.
We got a lot of CanCon in this episode.
The Canadian former Mr. Canada and metal rock star Thor.
Oh.
Yeah, and he was fresh off of sort of the Mr. Canada thing. So he's quite buff in the movie. It's got these sort of Meet the Feebles style puppets are the bad guys. It's just so weird and twisted. But he goes out to this farmhouse and, you know, all these demons get summoned and he has to, like, you know, summon the power of rock and roll.
So the power of rock is actually, like, defeating demons rather than calling them.
Well, it's sort of like it causes and then solves the problem at the same time.
Oh, so there's good rock and bad rock? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
You're saying that rock and roll isn't necessarily good or evil. It's how you use it.
Oh,
is that the message here?
I think that might be the message of Rock and Roll Nightmare.
Well, it all depends on whether or not, you know, you have a piece of the skull of...
yeah, exactly.
If you got one of Hieronymus, that's what it comes down to.
Well, of course, there was that episode of the Real Ghostbusters cartoon called Banshee Bake a Cherry Pie.
Wow. That sounds terrible.
It is. An Irish pop singer, Shanna O'Callaghan, who looks kind of like a member of the Misfits. Remember Jim and the Holograms, nemesis band?
Uh-huh.
And basically her singing just causes destruction.
Oh, okay, like a banshee.
She's releasing a record and performing a gig at Carnegie Hall that is going to be simulcast all over the USA. So the Ghostbusters, of course, have to stop her.
Because it's going to, like, kill everybody and destroy everything?
Yeah, I don't understand how you could record an album, though, singing destroys equipment.
Yeah,
but I guess that's just one of the many.
There's a plot hole
It seems like overkill.
Have you ever destroyed any equipment with the power of your voice, Sean?
Yeah, I destroyed my testicles by shouting at them. And that's how I ended up giving myself a vasectomy.
You didn't go back 3 weeks later. You just, I'm in DIY.
Now, I know that the Simple Plan were featured in Scooby-Doo recently.
Simple Plan?
The, like, Canadian band from Montreal or something like that?
Yeah, I do not understand their fame. I don't understand it.
I hate the fact that they get referred to as pop punk all the time.
I don't know, fake punk.
So their music appeared in the episode, but not actual cartoon
and
caricatures?
They, and them. No,
oh,
them.
Oh, it's just like when Scooby-Doo went back to the Harlem Globetrotters. Only now it's Scooby-Doo and Simple Plan.
I saw an episode of Scooby-Doo with Sonny and Cher in it.
Yeah.
Right.
It was amazing. Incredible actors. Oh, have you ever seen Phantom of the Paradise?
Oh, God, I hate that movie.
I really love it.
Oh,
there's
God.
Great music in it. There's one great song called Our Love is No Love, Baby.
Who plays the Our Phantom? Love.
Some nobody guy, but it's Brian De Palma's remake of the Phantom of the Opera,
right.
But it's set in a disco.
In a rock kind
it's
of
It's not
venue.
Like Paul Williams or anything, is it?
Am Paul I Williams something writes else? All the music.
But he's
Paul
not actually
Williams
in the movie?
Paul plays the devil.
Oh, sweet.
He plays the devil. His name is Peter Swan. And he seduces this beautiful young girl, and he takes the music of the Phantom and steals it for his own. It's a good movie. I like it.
He gets scarred because he gets, like, hot vinyl poured on his face, like record vinyl scars
right.
his face. That's how he
and
gets
teeth,
scarred
His
up.
Teeth are pulled out as well,
yeah.
and he has oh. silver teeth put in.
Yeah,
it's very weird.
I could see Paul Williams as the devil.
It is so campy and weird. Oh, it just drove me crazy.
If you can have George Burns as God, you can totally have Paul Williams as the devil. Agree or disagree?
Agree.
Well, Paul Williams as the devil is probably the only thing I really liked about that movie.
Well, I mean, if you're talking about musical terrible movies that I still somehow kind of like, you have to go to Sgt. Pepper. Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, a movie made in about 1978, starring the Bee Gees and Peter Frampton.
Is in Sgt. Pepper's?
Yeah, and all the songs of that album are in the music, but it's the Bee Gees doing them. And it's actually not so terrible, but this plot is awful.
Right.
It's got Steve Martin doing Maxwell Silverhammer. It's got Because the World is Round, It Blows My Mind, Alice Cooper.
Wow.
Aerosmith do Come Together.
Oh, it's a nice. Star-studded cast.
I'll Let It Be. So it's a really strange movie. And also George Burns. George Burns plays Mr. Kite.
All right.
He sings, for the benefit of Mr. Kite, there will be a show tonight on trampoline. There, the Hendersons will all be there, along with Pablo. Something's fair. What a scene. And he just talks the whole song.
You do a killer George Burns, by the way.
Well, it's my job.
Yeah, very Shatnerian.
When the inevitable animated George Burns TV series pops up, you will definitely be getting a call.
Well, if Patrick Dempsey doesn't get it for his horrible film, 18 Again, with George Burns. Do you ever remember that movie?
And, I do remember that
like
movie.
18, and he switches bodies with George Burns. And he's Patrick Dempsey is 18, and he's pretending to be George Burns. It's really awful.
Thank you, Patrick Dempsey. Well, we have to talk about the cartoon Metalocalypse.
Yeah, if we don't,
our fans
people are
going
to go crazy.
Yeah, the telephones would light up if we didn't talk about Metalocalypse. Have you seen any episodes of Metalocalypse, Sean?
I have never seen it.
Centers around the death metal band Death Clock, and their concerts are so notoriously dangerous that those attending are required to sign pain waivers at the entrance, releasing the band from legal liability in the very likely event that attendees are killed or maimed.
Oh, there you go.
The band is shown to have a callous disregard for their fans' safety, as shown in the first episode where they pour scalding hot coffee over concertgoers as part of their endorsement.
This isn't about
for
Great White, is it?
Great White.
Oh,
I'm sure inspired by.
Well, perhaps inspired by Gigi Allen a little bit.
Yeah, they're kind of like the fifth biggest economy in the world. They're like a metal supergroup, and it's pretty hilarious, actually.
Is it online, or where do you see it?
It was on the Cartoon Network. They have, I think, they're doing season 4 right now. So I think there are at least 2 or 3 DVD sets out. You can
I'll have to go into that.
Yeah, it's an Adult Swim cartoon. Yeah. I know lots of people who are massive fans of the show. I've never really watched it myself, and keep meaning to.
The creator does most of the voices, and this is one of those kind of cartoon bands that actually goes on tour. It's kind of like a Tenacious D kind of a thing. I went to see them. Mastodon opened for them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So I went to see them. They had animation playing
on
all,
a screen
all the time. Like,
okay.
They were totally synced up to the music.
Oh, really?
To the animation.
Okay.
They were that good. Like,
Wow.
It was pretty amazing.
They got tricked out.
Brendan Small is the name of the guy who created Metalocalypse.
I know Brendan Small.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, you should know this.
Well, he did home movies, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there was
Brendan. What happened to you? Oh, my God. And I love the gym teacher.
Coach McGurk.
This is my pecs. This is Big Rig. And this is Jesse. Anyway, great moments. Hi, and oh, my God. And also, Andy Kindler's on it. This isn't your boss. This isn't your old boss. This is your old new boss.
Is that Lindenson? Mr. Lindenson.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's great.
Yeah, that was a great show. And he had like some of Brendan's friends had a metal band on that show. And that was kind of like the bridge between the two series.
That was a spinoff, right?
Yeah, it wasn't the same characters. It wasn't anything like the style, but you could see musically how it went from one thing to another because there was like a lot of rock operas on home movies, and then that kind of led into it was kind of seemed like a natural progression into Metalocalypse.
I love that show.
Yeah,
my wife's favorite show.
If you like home movies, I think you will also like Metalocalypse, and vice versa. Hmm. Most people who are fans of one don't think of the other. The humorous aesthetic is very similar.
Beautiful.
Let's do Lesser of Two Evils. So in the cancer episode, we talked about sootwort.
Right.
From 1775, the squamous cell carcinoma of the skin of the scrotum affected chimney sweeps in their late teens and early 20s. But as early as 8 years old, who had been in contact with soot since their early childhood, sweat running down their bodies caused soot to accumulate in the scrotum, warts caused by the irritation from soot particles, and if not excised, developed into a scrotal cancer.
Okay.
All right. Pleasant.
This enlarged the testicle and proceeded up the spermatic cord into the abdomen where it proved fatal.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's okay. So there's that was one
so
of our options.
So there's that versus another 16th century horror to be a castrato.
Ah, so to say thematically appropriate to the music episode.
Exactly.
And I guess we're going to go with the crushing rather than
the snipping.
Yes.
Snipping.
Well,
I think a castrati, because at least you'd have a job. At least you could, and it's not involving dirt.
Well, it's true. You would have a job as a chimney sweep, but it would just be very filthy.
Yeah, but it'd be dirty and filthy, and you'd probably die young, if not from scrotal cancer, then from a chimney sweeper's lung or something that. You'd spend a lot of time
trapped in there.
So you might fall, and you'd have to learn to dance with Dick Van Dyke. So I'm going to say, and with as a castrati, you could have to live a long and prosperous life, and I'd say go for it.
I think Sean hit the nail on the head. The difference between these two is that one is probably a worse loss of the use of your testicles, being the castrati, but the other one, you die from abdomen cancer.
Right.
So it's kind of like the long-term pain versus the short-term pain.
Well, there is treatment.
You get to grow up enough to become an actual man.
there's that.
Yes. I guess that's
true.
I'm
going to point that out.
I mean,
I don't
still,
know if it's going to change
any life
mind.
Is better than no life. Yeah.
You could have treatment. The treatment for
the treatment
was
so great.
Surgery.
Wait, are you disparaging?
Victorian times treatment was great.
Sean Cullen, you're disparaging 17th century medicine?
I can't believe it. But yes.
Treatment was by surgery, where all the diseased flesh was cut out. Before the introduction of anesthetics, this was a simple process for the surgeon, but terrifying for the patient.
Oh, God.
Alternative treatments were also proposed, including the application of an arsenic paste poultice.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm sure that worked out really
like
well.
Another way
so
to die for me.
That doesn't change your mind about
about the soot warts.
That might have been this cancer thing, we don't know much about it. We're terrible doctors. We're actually more dangerous than you not doing anything. But if you put this on here, you'll die nice and quick and painlessly. Mm-hmm. It's arsenic.
I'm going to go with the soot warts. And the reason I'm going to go with the soot warts, because I am a procrastinator. Right? You know, the castrati, they slip a Mickey in your drink, you go to sleep, and you wake up, and somebody's been stomping on your balls until they're destroyed, right?
I am really looking forward to the alternative that's better.
The soot warts...
Or that's worse.
It's a slow growth. It's a slow burn. I can put off dealing with it for a really long time. I'm going to have to deal with being a castrati 5 seconds after they, slip a Mickey in my drink, right? So I'm going with the soot warts because it's a more drawn-out process. And because right. there is ostensibly a treatment for it, as remote as it is, that would actually be effective. The skepticism surrounding 17th century medicine put aside for a second.
I think the word you use look is ostensibly. Ostensibly, there is a treatment for it. Yeah. It's like saying, hey, you've got cancer. How about I punch you in the gut for an hour? And it'll loosen it up and you'll be okay.
We'll shake it free.
There was no treatment. There's no treatment. You will die. That's it.
Yeah.
But you'll die a man.
Yep.
Here's the thing about me. Okay, I'm not a
what
good singer.
What is a man? Does it just balls that make a man?
It really partly. That's part of it. I mean, we can get into all sorts of gender identity questions, but I think at least for me, I kind of want those. I'm not a good singer. I wouldn't have a job as a castrato. Like, I can every once in a while hit a note or two, but not professionally.
I would feel better about the castrati if there had been karaoke machines, because I'm killer on a karaoke machine.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I have video proof that I might put up that I'm not, because that's what I did last night as research was went and did karaoke, and I had it filmed.
So you should avoid castrati.
Why did I say that? I could have not put it on for this.
Because now you're sure that you're going to be one of the 3,960 that's not going to make the cut.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So why give up the balls? I think I'm going to have to take my chances.
Roll with the
civil wars. And, you know, get to experience being an adult male at least a couple times before I die.
Here's the other thing. Probably not all chimney sweeping children got sootwart.
But you do.
You do.
Oh,
yeah.
So we're guaranteeing sootwart?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
We're guaranteeing sootwart. We're not necessarily guaranteeing death.
Right.
Right.
It'll be horrible either way.
The things I do with my balls, I enjoy. So I'm going to have to keep them.
You're going to go with sootwart
for those chances.
You know, you might have a shorter lifespan, but at least you will be able to ejaculate.
Yeah.
But who would want to have sex with you when your genitals are covered in tumors?
Well, you know, this is the 1700s. It's not like you're going to find people whose genitals aren't covered with tumors all that easily. And besides, once they're at the point where they can see the tumors, they can't really, you know, nobody's going to back out.
In the 17th century, they had that saying about bumping tumors, right? For, you know.
That was the euphemism
for sex.
Let's bump tumors, baby. Yeah.
And who knows, maybe the tumor will move up onto my Johnson and it will look even bigger.
Oh,
just extend at the tip.
That's
what you're saying.
Sorry, I'm just fucking you with a giant wart.
That's a glass half full statement right there, Joe. That's a glass half full statement.
I'm going to have to go with sootwart.
Wow.
Wow. I did not expect that because you're a singer.
I can carry a tune most of the time.
Yeah.
But I don't want to hang out in church all day. It's fucking boring shit.
It's the church thing that was turned the tide on you?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, yeah. Sean, we want to thank you for being on Caustic Soda.
Yeah, we really appreciate it.
This was so great.
And we want to remind our listeners that they should listen to the Sean Pod.
Thank you.
They should download from iTunes your two albums, Sean Cullen Live and I Am a Human Man.
That's right. And now I just found out that all of my books are on iBooks.
Oh, there you go.
So, yeah, look up my books. They're really for a young adult, but there's still a lot of funny, weird stuff in it, bizarre footnotes, that sort of thing. So they're quite entertaining.
Yeah,
so try that out.
I think if Harry Potter has shown us anything is that young adult books can be enjoyed by everyone in the entire fucking world.
Absolutely. Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
I'm going to check your books out. Absolutely.
And listen for Sean on Rocket Monkeys whenever that comes on your television.
Yeah, it'll come all over your television. Because they're monkeys, after all, and spend a lot of time masturbating.
Yeah.
But I like the thing, throwing poop, flung poop. I love that stuff. We actually get to say flying poop a lot. So we're pretty happy with that.
Right.
And the monkeys are quite fun. And there's a lot of, I mean, Mark Eavestaff, who is the producer of the show, and Alex Galatis, and they're all really brilliant. This is going to be a very funny show, and I think, on the same token, old adults will also like it.
It's such a weird feeling to know you're alive. It's such an awful feeling. You're dying inside, and when you wake up, startled to say, I hope I don't go crazy today. It's such a bad feeling. A feeling you know that we'll be back when the week is new, and we'll have more gross facts for you, and you'll have things you want to hear about. We will too.
Caustic Soda was recorded by Mike Leeson while being mentally controlled by a parasitic barnacle. To comment on episodes, make a donation, or see show notes, links, and videos, visit CausticSodaPodcast.com. Rate and review us on iTunes. Visit us on Facebook. Subscribe to our Twitter feed at Caustic Podcast. Email us at info@CausticSodaPodcast.com. Meow, meow, meow.